Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Jen, and this is usually the point at which you hear Annie as well, but you're not hearing her yet. And the reason for that's going to become clear in just a moment, because today we have a very special episode for you. We're going to talk to the three authors of a special fanfic project that I suspect you have probably heard of. It is the unofficial season 12 of The X-Files. And all six of the stories, otherwise known as episodes, are online right now. And we're going to link to those. So if you haven't read them yet, do it now. Stop listening, run away, read them, come back, because we're going to have spoilers aplenty, because we are going to get into these stories. I can't wait to get into the nitty-gritty. So on that note, we're going to meet today's guests. So say hello to the three authors of season 12 of The X-Files. First, we have Casey, who writes under the pen name of Slippin' Mickey's. Hi, Casey.
Hi, Jen. It's nice to be wonderful. Here.
It's so great to have you on the show. You and I met once before at
Spooky Empire
in Orlando. So it's great to be chatting with you again, and I am delighted.
As am I.
Welcome to X-Files Diaries.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. And we also have Elise Wax, also known as Rose Thornhill. Hello, Elise.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm good. I'm excited.
Fab, you and I met in a couple of different con locations that I frequented last year. We met in Montreal and also in Orlando, so that was awesome.
Yes, but you were there to meet David Duchovny. I was just there for work, so you won.
I think I kind of got the better of that deal, but probably you came out better financially than I did, so that was all good. We both had wins and losses on that. Our third author is someone that you may know. Her name's Annie, and she writes under the name Admiralty. Hello, Annie.
Oh, well, hello, Jen. Thank you for having me on this podcast that I've never heard of.
And I think you've had a little podcasting experience before. If this is by some chance your first time listening to X-Files Diaries, Annie is normally the co-host of X-Files Diaries, but she's a guest this week because she is one of the amazing authors who put together this amazing fanfic project. So I asked her to be a guest, and I decided I would just take over the damn show and interview these three very talented writers, because I want to hear all about how this happened, why this happened, all of the good stuff. So,
Annie, are you sure this isn't a coup?
What kind of coup? Are you guys going to take over?
Oh, no, I meant Jen.
Oh, you're right. I see. Sorry, I'm a little slow. I'm going to just drink my wine.
Thinking, and that is it. Annie's just going to be a guest from now on if I invite her back, but I'm sure that I will.
I didn't foresee this.
You didn't think this all the way through. So thank you, ladies, for spending some time with us and talking about this terrific project that I'm very, very excited about and have been since I first heard about it. So let's talk a little bit about you guys before we talk in great detail about the project. So first, Casey, why don't you just tell us a little bit about sort of your background with the X-Files and with fanfic and how you came to where you are in the X-Files fandom?
Sure. So I started watching the show, I think I saw my first episode my senior year of high school, and that was season 4. My first episode was Never Again. I'm shocked that's not what happened watching the show after watching Never Again as being my first episode. But I remember liking it so much that I went into Spanish 4 the next morning and being like, did anyone watch The X-Files last night? It was really good. And ended up not watching it again until moved to college. And my freshman year roommate, who I didn't know, I just went in blind and was assigned to her. And I think the show premiered like our second week of school. And she was like, we're watching The X-Files tonight, just so you know. I'm like super into the show and you have to watch it and everyone has to be quiet and the lights are going to be off. And I'm like, first week, I was like, okay, crazy person.
But then I can
do that. Well, and then after the episode, I remember because it was Redux and Redux 2. So when it was time for the next week for the episode to go, we were both like, everyone shut up, lights off, no talking. And then that was it for me. I was just totally
hooked. You were on board.
I was so 100% on board. This was in 97. And then I think I discovered fanfic pretty much right after that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I was so into the show, I was like, I need more. Give me more. Mm-hmm. And I started writing it in 98. It was pretty terrible from what I remember. Like, I don't even think I archived some of it on Gossamer. I had, like, friends who would archive it for me, and I refused to go back and reread it. It's so bad. I wrote quite a few. Probably, I discovered some the other day that someone had archived, like, three or four sequels that I had written, and I had no memory whatsoever. I'm like, I remember writing that first one. I'm like, I wrote two sequels? Wow. Yeah, so I stepped away from fanfic in the early 2000s, and I wrote, like, a two episodes of JAG fanfiction, which I actually really... Weird, because I wasn't super into that show, but, like, I had an idea, and I was like, I'm just going to try it. And they ended up being... Elise is dying over here laughing, but... Because, I mean, it's JAG.
It's JAG!
I can't blame you. You can laugh all you want.
You do you,
I did do me. I did do me. It was 2005, and I did me, and it was great. And they actually ended up being... pretty good as far as I'm concerned. But I came back to X-Files fan fiction after season 11 because it was so fucking good.
Sweet. Okay, excellent, thanks for that. Elise, why don't you tell us a little bit about your relationship with the X-Files?
I started watching the season premiere or series premiere, the 1993 September 10th. It was a Friday night. I was 13. And it was a Friday night, and I was like, oh, I need to find something to watch on TV. So I was flipping channels, and I remember seeing an ad for X-Files, and I was like, it's about aliens and the supernatural. I like that stuff, so I'll give it a shot. And I remember I was in the kitchen, and I was going to make some popcorn, and the show started, and I was glued to the TV by the first commercial. I hadn't moved. I hadn't made the popcorn. I was obsessed from the moment it began. And from that point on, I started recording them on VHS and watching them every day when I got home from school. The first fanfic I wrote was probably, I don't know, within a month of the show starting. I didn't.
You were a baby.
I was literally
13-year-old author.
That's like so precious.
I went big though. I wrote a spec script.
13. You go. Yeah, I like it. I like the ambition.
It was. I was like, well, I'm gonna do this. And I remember I met David Duchovny and Chris Carter at a season finale, like an Emmys thing, and they signed it for me. And I sent that to Fox all the time, to the point where their legal
unsolicited material.
Whoa. The legal department actually had to call me and finally just beg me to stop sending it because I send it so often.
that is awesome. I love the persistence because that is what a good writer does, right?
Yeah, you gotta be persistent. Exactly. And now I'm a professional writer and writing fanfic. I wrote fanfic for a couple of years, and then I kind of dropped out of the fandom in general for a lot of different reasons. And I didn't get back into fanfic until after season 11. It was like, oh my gosh, they grew up with me, you know, a little bit older than me. And I was like, I need to continue. And then I went online. There was social media, and it was all...
It's a totally different world than it was when we first started.
And now my husband's completely lost me to the fandom.
I think all of our husbands can relate.
We have a few fandom widowers amongst us, I think. What about you, Annie? I think that our listeners know quite a lot about your relationship with the X-Files, but I don't know if we've talked that much about your fanfic experience and your experience with reading it and writing it. So especially about the writing, what would you like to say about that?
I'm actually really new to it, relatively. I didn't read a whole lot of it back in the day. I remember when I first was introduced to fanfic, it was Star Wars fanfic. Mm-hmm. And I remember being such a young person, and I remember stumbling across it, I should say, and being like, what is this? This is inappropriate. What are Han and Leia doing to each other? No, I remember this very vividly. But I was also kind of like, okay, I get it. I get the idea of this. It's like people kind of getting to fill out what we didn't get to see on the show. So I was kind of always intrigued by that. But I don't do a lot of writing. I've always enjoyed writing, and I was always okay doing it at school. I was always pretty good at it. And I just started recently, like after season 11, honestly, just to kind of fulfill my own headcanon, which I think most people maybe do, you know, even if it's a fake headcanon, they just want to kind of satisfy their own needs. My own needs were to just fill in the holes. So that's kind of what I started doing. And so, yeah, I only started rewriting it and reading X-Files fan fiction like a year ago after season 11.
But I agree with Elise,
with what Elise says about the idea of them being older and having all these experiences behind them. I think it makes them more interesting to write.
Totally.
Weirdly, because you have all this information. So
yeah, cool beans. Season 11 has provided a lot of fanfic inspiration, I think, across the fandom, which is fantastic and amazing and wonderful. So thanks season 11 for that and for many other things, which leads us into season 12. Which, of course, we have no expectation of seeing on the TV, and probably just as well, in my opinion. But we have great writers who come along and decide that let's give season 12 a try ourselves. So you gals came up with this plan at some point. Tell me sort of like, what's the origin story of season 12? Where did this come from?
So not right before Spooky Empire, but about a month before Spooky Empire, I think Annie and I decided, well, let's just go. Screw it. We'll buy our tickets. We'll go to Spooky Empire. And so that was obviously in late October. And so when we bought our tickets, it was about a month before. And we were so excited and so pumped. And our friend Elise lived very nearby that we were all like, let's go out and get drinks and celebrate, and we'll talk about how excited we are to meet David and Jillian. We're like two glasses of wine later. We're at the restaurant, the three of us. And we're like, you know what we should do? We should do an alternate season 12. Because I remember growing up with the X-Files, like whenever you thought the season was going to be, or like the show was going to be over, an explosion of alternate seasons like came about. I remember a couple of alternate season 8s after, you know, the Mulder and Scully kiss. We weren't sure if we were going to get that everybody back. I remember a bunch of alternate season 10s. And so I was like, you know what we should do? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was my idea, but...
I don't remember. I remember we were all just talking about our fic because we'd recently all started writing it.
Right.
Or for the first time or whatever. And yeah, we were just like, this would be really cool
collaboration. Like, yeah, that night we decided we were going to do, let's do 6 episodes. We'll each write 2. It's going to be perfect. And like we kind of, about a week later, we got together, decided, like kind of broke it out. Like I want to do
when
a
we
monster
were sober.
Of the week.
Yeah, right. And we decided, hey, this still sounds like fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at that. Imagine. So then we broke it out a week later, and it only took us a year.
It took us quite a long time. This was a labor of love for sure.
Yeah. But we all have busy lives and had to fit the fanfic in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So the concept came together fairly quickly by the sounds of things in terms of the number of episodes, and you decided to do like 5 Monster of the Weeks or 5 standalones more accurately, and then one mythology. Was that something that came pretty quickly?
Yeah, I remember when we were at Elise's house that, you know, about a week after we decided to do this, when we were really hammering it out. And I remember saying I wanted to write a monster of the week. Mm-hmm. I know Annie wanted to tackle some mythology. Mm-hmm. Elise, you had ideas.
I wanted to do a horror episode, and because that's my background is horror everything. And I wanted to do a Darren Morgan-esque episode.
Ooh. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, and I remember originally I wanted to do a Monster of the Week and a Slice of Life, kind of like a, you know, a chill. But after I hammered out the Monster Week pretty quickly, that came fast. But then when it came to episode 4, which ended up not being a Monster.
Yeah, well,
of Life.
I would call, and we'll talk about this later, but I call episode 4 kind of our experimental episode.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
Like we ended up, we really wanted to do 6 completely different types. And I know we wanted to harken back to original, and immediately I was just like, I want to do Home. I want to do it. It's my favorite episode. Yeah. We got to see those peacocks back. And so I kind of claimed that one. And then we weren't even going to do mythology. Honestly, we discussed even not doing mythology at all because Chris Carter had made the mythology go so wacko. But then I was like, you know what? I would like to take a shot at this, a shot at kind of like repairing, I don't like that word, but sort of like making it a little bit more,
cleaning it up,
and making people feel a little bit better than people felt at the end of season 11. And so I was like, you know what, I think that I would really like to just kind of do some sort of mythology wrap-up episode. So we had the sequel type, we had the classic Monster of the Week, we had the Darren Morgan-esque comedy episode, we have the experimental episode, we have the horror episode, and then the mythology to wrap it up. So we all kind of were like, the types of episodes were all sort of hammered out that very first meeting that we had. So we kind of knew what we were going to do, but things have evolved for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah, they took a couple turns.
So you each kind of sort of right from the get-go gravitated towards certain types that you wanted to write. And it just worked out really well that they all sort of complemented each other and covered a wide spectrum of different sort of X-File genres, for want of a better term.
Well, we came together so well.
We definitely worked together, you know, like a writer's room, and kind of made sure that everything, that there was like a, not necessarily a through line, but something that kind of connected all of the episodes. Yeah.
Originally, I think we wanted to do like a B plot through line through everything, and then we decided it would be kind of too difficult to, you know, make it work well. So we got it in there.
We did. We'll get to that. Yeah. But we did figure out a way to sort of connect all of the episodes. I think from the beginning, we all kind of knew the main bullet points we wanted to hit. Like, we definitely wanted to bring back Monica. We wanted to bring back Doggett. Mm-hmm. We wanted to
Skinner.
Bring back Skinner.
We wanted to sort of make sure everyone was like, okay, these characters are all alive. We wanted to have some sort of William/Jackson reunion, and we wanted the birth of the baby. Like, these were like all the main points that we were like, this is what we want to hit. These are the things that people are going to want to see. And so it was weird. I remember in terms of talking about the order of all the episodes and how this would work out, it was really kind of through Scully's pregnancy, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
Because Casey was like, I want to do the sonogram scene. I'm like, okay, well, then
that's going to be episode two.
So yours is going to be episode two. I remember kind of working it out that way. And I do remember, because Casey and I have both have kids, and Elise would be constantly texting us like, is this what would be happening around month 7? And we're like, nope, yeah, put that a little later. It was really kind of funny because she was asking us all the like pregnancy questions.
I have no children. I have no plans on having children. So I was like, what does this mean? What is that?
Yeah.
We were more than happy to
oblige. It was all news to me. So, I mean, like, it's kind of great the way Scully's pregnancy acts as sort of a natural timing arc for the season, doesn't it? Because the season sort of runs, if I remember correctly, from like April to October in like 2018, I guess.
We gave her a reasonable length of pregnancy, an appropriate timeline for her pregnancy. Yes, we wanted to make sure
actually thought about things like that. So maybe we'll just jump in and start talking about episode one then. Annie, you wrote the first episode, which you'll have to tell me if I'm pronouncing it correctly. The title is Novam Domum?
Novum Domum, I guess. I actually am not sure how to pronounce it. Maybe I should have looked that up phonetically.
That's okay. It's all right. It's a written work. We don't really ever have to say it out loud. So,
I think it's Novum Domum, but it's...
What does that mean?
New home.
Ah, nice. New home. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. You know, we can't use home again, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I could call it
home again.
Yeah, I considered that, Jen. And then I was like, no, that's silly. And then I was like, new home, and that's lame. And then I'm like, you know, what if I did new home in a different language? That would be pretty sweet. And so there's actually no real meaning for using Latin.
Well, it's very X-Files, too.
It's just very X-Files. It kind of fits with a lot of the Latin titles. Yeah, there is meaning. My other episode is actually a German phrase that actually has meaning within the episode, but for Novum Domum, I just liked the sound of it.
I like the sound of it too. It does sound really, I gotta say, all the titles sound really X-Filesy to me. I love the titles.
Yay! We kind of collabed on a lot of them. Collabed, but like, we definitely ran these sorts of things by each other.
We ran everything by each other. I think that was really good. We had this really good symbiotic, like, what do you guys think about this? And it was like, yeah, that's great. Or no, why don't we do it like this? Oh yeah, that's great.
Our text chains are miles long.
They are.
I bet. So have you guys essentially been writing this sort of off and on for a year,
almost a year now.
Yep. I mean, we all have had our own
big project.
Yeah, we have our own projects and lives and other things that we have not been doing this nonstop for a year.
Right.
But it's been something that we have all been definitely in contact with each other working on for the past year. So
this has been sort of a long time in the birthing, not unlike Scully's baby.
Yeah.
Just the first one.
So yeah, I mean, it shows. I think it's it's really well organized, well put together. I'm a fan. I'm gonna be a fangirl to a certain extent in the course of this interview, because I loved all the stories. Yay. I don't read a whole lot of X-Files fanfic. We've talked about that before on the show. But I loved all of these stories. I think they're awesome. If you haven't read them, again, stop listening and go read them, or finish listening, and if you don't mind spoilers, and then go read them. Either way, just, you really do have to read them. So getting back to episode one, Annie, this is a sequel to Home. And I think a lot of our listeners probably know already that it is your favorite episode. Uh-huh. Tell me why you decided to go that route. What attracted you to writing a sequel to your favorite episode?
Well, we talked about doing other sequels, but I was just sort of like, with Home, I knew it was something that was left so open-ended, like perfectly open-ended. It was one of those X-Files that you never really know quite what happened to them. They got away, as far as we're aware. And because of that, and because I feel like this happened, it was such an old, it's a pretty old episode, season four. I was like, this one is actually a really good, good one to revisit. Obviously, also because it's my favorite episode. And I liked the idea of working it in with Scully having just come home, because in, you know, in the storyline of the X-Files, she would have just recently, you know, gotten back together with Mulder and then moved
officially
right. moved back into their house pretty recently. So I liked the idea of kind of bringing the horror show of Home into poor Mulder and Scully's world, because that's what they're there for, is for us to torment them. And we love to do that.
We also want them to have nice things.
Yeah. But we do, we give them the nice things.
I think we do.
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have lots of nice things. They have lots of nice things through these stories, and that makes all of us happy.
There's lots of kissing, so, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of everything, quite frankly, and I'm happy for it.
We get a lot of that. We know we want these to feel like real episodes, but we also know our audience, so.
Hell yeah.
Hence the kissing.
And we know Mulder and Scully. They're not going to keep their hands off each other in The Unremarkable Host.
I mean, right? Exactly.
As if. I want to sort of, I know that you're good at this stuff, Annie, so I know you're going to know this. What exactly is the timing of the start of episode one? Are you picturing this? Like, I think there's a reference to it being just like a couple of weeks after the end of season 11, My Struggle 4. What were you picturing for that?
It's a few weeks. I think we pictured like 5 or 6 weeks, because I think My Struggle 4 is mid-March. From some of the surveillance footage. I'm more of a stickler on all this timeline stuff than most people, but like, I did want it to make sense. So yeah, we also agreed that in this premiere, we're going to have to establish what Mulder and Scully are up to. They're not working at the FBI anymore as agents, but they still need to be in that world, because they're Mulder and Scully. And so we decided that, okay, Scully's going to be a pathologist at Quantico and Mulder's going to be a professor, because that's hot. Right?
Totally. Oh,
and it's perfect. It's like good, like, you know, autumn years jobs, and they're staying close to their roots, but they're not out in the field anymore. And so we wanted to kind of make it reasonable that they could have made that transition, you know, relatively quickly, but not too terribly quickly. Like, they've had like about five or six weeks to sort of settle into this since the events of My Struggle for. So,
and we established fairly quickly and sort of without a whole lot of doubt that Mulder and Scully do believe that Jackson is still alive, that they're not wondering too much, is he alive, do we think he's dead? That seems to be fairly clearly sort of established fairly early on, so that does not seem to play a huge role in terms of like wondering, is he alive or dead? Why did you decide to kind of get that right out of the way at the beginning?
I think we really wanted to make sure that, like, we know as viewers that Jackson's alive, because we see him alive at the end, but we don't know for sure whether or not Mulder and Scully know he's alive. I think that one of the main themes of the X-Files is the idea of hope. And I like the idea that they just have a very strong feeling. So there's a way in the first episode where I kind of explained that something happens. I mean, we could talk about it, I guess, because we're talking about it.
Let's talk about it.
They know that CSM, Smoking Man, is dead for sure. We wanted to make sure Smoking Man was dead. We're like, you guys, he's dead. Everyone, he's dead. And the idea was that they knew that it must have been Jackson, because he had been like exploded, like Mulder had seen him explode the Perlio people. So it wasn't like we knew for sure he's alive, but we have this very strong feeling that he's alive. Yeah. Again, that hope that I just wanted to maintain, especially because we know he's alive as viewers, and we know that we're expecting to see him at some point, or hoping to see him at some point, we wanted Mulder and Scully to sort of have that, always have that hope. I think that's why we wanted to establish right off the bat that they were pretty sure he was alive, or at least hoped he was alive.
Yeah, and we have a pretty sort of relatively happy Mulder and Scully throughout almost all of season 12. There's not like a whole lot of angst in their relationship for the most part. They seem to be having they finally do have nice things. They seem to have a fairly sort of nice sort of domestic life, and we get each of those, each story has a nice peek into all of that. So was there a reason why you decided to kind of make their relationship sort of relatively low drama compared with how we have typically seen it portrayed in the past?
I think it's along the lines of, we wanted them to have nice things. Like, they deserve it. They've been through so much. They're, you know.
But also, I mean, season 11 was them falling back in love with one another. And it was really, I mean, you saw Mulder being so grown up and just really coming to understand that, you know, he needs to start treating Scully a little bit better and be more patient. And she, on the other side of it, kind of relaxed a little bit, and she was smiling more and being silly. And so I think that, at least for me, that just really made it easier, because they're both in a different place in their life. They're not trying to prove anything to anyone. They've accepted that they're going to be together forever. You know, that kind of thing.
I think it was the sort of thing too, is that, they've come as far as they possibly can. They've been through everything that there was. We just had no desire to fuck with that bond. We were like, this is the one thing that we're going to make sure is stays fine. I know in episode 5, like, that's probably the only episode in which they have a little bit of a heated argument, which is we all agreed this was actually very realistic for them as a couple for that to happen. It added a little bit of angst, and it added a little bit of realism that we really wanted to have. I mean, we there was enough drama going on, you know, home invasions, all kinds of horrible things that we were like, okay, I think that we don't need to make, I mean, you know what, in a way, this is just me speaking, I'm not speaking for the others, but I like the idea of proving that, hey, we don't need them to be separated to create a product, to create something people are going to want to consume. Mulder and Scully don't have to be at odds for this to be interesting. That's just, that's not part of, like, their deal.
Yeah, the conflict can come from somewhere else.
Yes.
I think that is something that I wish the show could have explored a little bit more. I think, but that's sort of the wish fulfillment of fanfic, is you create that conflict can come from someone else, and in this case it did, because they're solid right now. They're in a great place, and they're grown ass people.
I love that. I love the idea. And I mean, I've talked about this on the podcast before too, that why couldn't we have had at least a couple of episodes of Happy Mulder and Scully? And I think that your vision for season 12 proves that you can have a stable Mulder and Scully and still have really interesting episodes. And their relationship can be interesting. A happy relationship can still be an interesting relationship. And there's still sort of a through line of Mulder's sort of new way of being, in terms of, is he done with the X-Files? You know, he's moved on. He's letting his obsessions go, or is he? And so that's kind of an interesting sort of through line. So there's, you know, it's not a perfect relationship, but it's a happy one.
But what is?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Exactly. So I think that makes it real. One of my favorite lines in the first story was when Scully says, "I'm happy, Mulder, and I'm not sure how to feel about that." And I said, "Scully, same Scully, as an ex-lover, I wasn't sure how to feel about it either at first, but I was won over in the course of the series." So, getting into the specific sort of plot just a little bit about in Novum Domum, episode 1, Annie, it obviously picks up the story up from home, but it takes it to me in sort of like a more sort of nuanced, interesting direction in terms of the introduction of the character of Daisy, who is a more sort of sympathetic version of one of the members of the Peacock family. And even in terms of how Mrs. Peacock is portrayed, you know, Scully seems to have a bit of sort of admiration for her to a certain extent. So it seems like, and also just the idea that, you know, there's this idea also that we're finally calling a spade, and we're recognizing that what went on in that family was abuse and those sorts of things that maybe weren't addressed in the original home, which was one of the reasons I was not crazy about the episode. So what were you thinking sort of with where you were, the direction you wanted to take it in?
Honestly, Daisy Peacock kind of came about originally as a villain. And then I decided as I was writing the story, I was like, you know, this is actually going to be much more interesting if she's not a villain. If she's if she's sort of a foil is the right word, but she's kind of an opposite of Mrs. Peacock. Like she's still this sort of strong female character slash antagonist, but she wants to sort of free herself from the life that they want from her. Like I like the idea of that this is this self-perpetuating cycle of these people of this family over and over. I mean, Scully talks about it in Home, how they're just going to keep reproducing and keep the family going. And I was like, well, what would it be like if somebody didn't want that? Or I mean, in Daisy's case, she can't, but she also doesn't want to. And I loved the idea of making her into a sympathetic character who could sort of call a spade, show us what this was and sort of end that cycle and kind of become free from it. So honestly, that was probably my favorite part about writing this episode was coming up with that character and trying to make, it's fun to write original characters. It's hard, but I love the idea of the Peacocks. I love them as villains. And I was like, you know what, if I could make somebody that's not quite a villain, it could make them a little bit more interesting, you know? So,
yeah. I thought that was a really cool direction to go in. I thought it just added another layer of interest to the Peacock family, so that they're not quite such slightly one-dimensional villains. That it adds an extra depth to them. So, and I kind of forgot that Daisy's actually an original character. I think that it sometimes when you're reading fanfic, the original characters kind of stand out because they're not terrifically well written sometimes. But I thought Daisy was she fit in perfectly with the story. So. She was really well written.
Thanks.
I like Daisy a lot. So
me too.
I thought that was really interesting. And and you kind of like you really got into the Home vibe with the use of music as well. You had the Del Shannon song "Runaway" kind of through the show, which just to me seemed like a really perfect match. So did that song kind of pop into your head right from the beginning, or did you kind of have to work for a while to come up with it?
Honestly, I wanted to have a song, and that section was kind of left blank for a while. I was like, we're gonna have a song here because this is the Home. Like, one of my favorite things about Home is the whole sequence with
Johnny Mathis.
Wonderful, yeah, the Johnny Mathis bit. And I wanted to do something very similar to kind of harken back to that. I know it's hard to get the idea of music through a written medium, but I really kind of wanted to get that across and have people pick up on that. I'm glad you picked up on that, Jen. Awesome. As far as the Del Shannon song is concerned, I just remembered that song from my childhood always just kind of creeping me out. Like it was not the actual song, but like there's like a bridge in the middle with like this kind of weird, I don't know. We'll have to play it for people, but like, it's just, I don't know. It suddenly popped into my head. I think I heard it, and then I was listening to the words and I was like, this is actually perfect pop, it's going in there. So it kind of just came about serendipitously, but it did have meaning to me because it creeped me out as a kid, if that answers your question.
That's cool. Yeah, no, it does somehow just work. Like, I can't put my finger on why it seems to be homey, but it does work. And it's a well enough known song that sometimes reading fanfic and there's a reference to a song and I have to run off to YouTube and listen to it because I'm like, I have no idea what this song is, but it seems really important to the story. But this is a pretty well-known song, so I knew it right away, so I thought it worked well in the context of the story. And I got to give a shout out to Dagoo, who makes his first of many Dagoo fantastic appearances.
I think we tried to work him into every episode.
Yeah.
He's in every episode. Yeah. I took careful note of that.
Well, I am, this is Elise speaking, and I am a crazy dog lady. I have three at home. So I was heartbroken when Dagoo did not make an appearance in season 11. So I made sure to put him in to season 12.
Yeah. Nice.
I remember that being Elise's, like,
if we're doing this, Dagoo is going to be in every episode.
Yep.
Like,
that was my one thing.
That was my one thing too, quite frankly. So I'm really happy. Every time Dagoo showed up, I got extra excited. Dagoo.
Me too.
That's the way it is when you have a dog, right? He's just in your life. So, he's just there all the time. So why not talk about him? So he made me happy. He's great. And like, he's part of the action in episode one. He's in peril. I was very scared for Dagoon, even though I knew Annie wouldn't do anything bad to him.
You trusted me for that. Wow, did you? You knew I wouldn't kill a dog. That's terrible. But I actually, that was one of the first scenes I wrote, because I don't know why in my mind I hear Mulder saying, put down my fucking dog. Like, I remember, and I'm like, that's going in the story. And I'm like, who's going to hold Dagoon? And then it all kind of came together. And I'm like, yep, this is happening. So that is so weirdly, that home invasion scene was one of the first scenes that I wrote. But yeah, no, nice. Dagoon, you... We're never going to do anything to Dagoo. He's safe.
Dagoo is awesome. So I love Dagoo's role in throughout season 12, and I wish it had been season 11. I agree with Elise on that. So excited about like the major role he played in a couple of the episodes. We'll talk about him in a second as well with regard to episode 2. And I believe strongly he's the hero more than once. Mm-hmm. And so one day I was texting with Annie and I said, I'm picturing the opening credits for season 12 and we see everyone see everyone's picture, and there has to be also a super serious picture of Dagoo in the opening credits right after we see Julian Anderson and David Duchovny. So he's part of the main cast as far as I'm concerned. So very excited. That's really interesting that that's the first scene you wrote too. I'm always so interested to hear the process that writers have, because I don't write any fiction, so I'm like, it's all like magic to me. So I think it's really awesome. Was there anything that you found kind of like difficult to write about this episode, Annie?
No, I mean, I honestly just wanted to, you know, do justice to a fantastic episode. I think a lot of people would agree it's probably one of the best episodes of the series. Even if it's not their favorite, I think a lot of people can agree it's one of the best. That was probably the hardest thing, is just making sure I could do something that hopefully lived up to it. So
I loved it.
But I was happy with it. So.
I thought it was awesome. Anything else you want to add about your episode before we move on to number 2?
No, just yay Dagoo.
Yay, Dagoo. That's what's gonna, I'm all, yeah, if we could give a subtitle to the season, I would make it Yay, Dagoo, personally. So let's move on to episode 2, which is entitled Brood Parasite, written by Casey, also known as Slippin' Mickeys. Hi, Casey, how you doing?
Hi, Jen, I'm great.
That's superb. This is like a true sort of monster of the week, right? And this was something you said that you sort of felt like you wanted to write right from the beginning. Yeah. Sort of, what kind of compelled that from you?
Right from the beginning, I knew I wanted to do a Monster of the Week. Monster of the Weeks are kind of my favorite. I knew I wanted to do it something sort of in line with like Darkness Falls, where it's something natural that's the monster, you know, something naturally occurring and not, you know, humans didn't create it. It was, you know, I wanted to do something along those lines. I remember I looked at my notes tonight before I came over here that we took that first night when went over to Elisa's house, and excuse me, and I had three things. The first thing was I wanted to do like a neighbor came to Mulder and Scully for help, and I wanted that to be kind of the impetus of the episode, where I didn't want, you know, I mean, all these X-Files come to Mulder and Scully would go to these X-Files. I wanted one to kind of come to them and find them. I wanted it to be a naturally occurring monster somewhere out in the world. And I think the third thing was I really wanted to use a sonogram as a way of kind of figuring out a piece, like a clue or a piece of the evidence. I thought that would be, that was like the cool visual in my head. And so those were the three things that I had. And I sort of, Brood Parasite kind of came from that.
Nice. Cool. Where did the, is it a pterosaur? Am I saying that right?
It's a pterosaur. Yeah.
I had to get my husband to look up on Wikipedia tonight. I'm like, is that like a flying dinosaur?
Dinosaur. Totally.
It's kind of like a flying dinosaur. So I think that's really cool. Like, where did that come from, the idea of the flying dinosaur?
Isn't that a good question? Mulder and Scully don't know either. It comes, it goes. I mean, that's the beauty of the X-Files, you know? I mean, you don't, like, there's no, you know, there's never really an explanation of where these things come from. They just come and they've got to try to, you know, save themselves and figure it out. So
it's so cool.
I took the same approach.
Nice. I like it. And it was also very sort of X-Files-y that the proof disappears, like it literally washes down the river.
It literally washes away. And then, you know, the last shot I had in my head, I was like, you know, if I was panning away, if I was directing this episode, I would pan away and you would see the egg that they lost, that Mulder and Scully lost, sitting in a nest with other eggs from a... a different creature, because that's what a brood parasite is. The definition of a brood parasite is typically a bird or some other creature with eggs that puts their egg in another's nest and lets the other, you know, the other couple raise their child, basically. That's yeah. That's what a brood parasite is. So
cool. And
Dagoo also comes to the rescue in episode two as well.
He's like the hero.
Yeah, he finds Mulder. He shows Mulder where he should be looking. All that kind of stuff. Good old Dagoo.
Plays a major role. I'm always a little nervous for his safety at all times.
You're more nervous for him than you are for Mulder and Scully, probably.
Way more. Like, this
don't worry. We'd never hurt Dagoo.
Mulder and Scully have guns, though. You know, Dagoo doesn't have opposable thumbs.
Right. He's just a little guy, but he's a tough little guy and smart and brave and loyal, if I may say. Mm-hmm. And I loved that the ultrasound scene where they sort of secretly scan the egg. It's kind of like, I like it because it combines sort of the X-file of the episode with the ongoing pregnancy storyline. So that's
right. We wanted to have make sure that Mulder had a part of this pregnancy and was really heavily involved. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to make sure he's there. He's like 100% a part of this.
And that mm-hmm. scene, I think, was the impetus for the episode, right?
Yeah.
Like you wanted to have something that you could.
That was the kernel. That was the kernel of the idea that brought out the whole thing. Yeah. I wanted to use a sonogram to kind of discover something. And I was like, oh, because that would be cool.
Yeah. Like, what if you could see inside an egg? I remember this conversation.
It was like, we got to see inside something. Because, I was thinking Darkness Falls, there's something, inside and it gets released or whatever. And that's kind of where it all came from.
It was like super scary, actually. So. Well, I was pretty terrified.
Did my job well, then that makes me happy. I'm glad I scared you, Jen.
Yeah, I mean, I scare relatively easily, but I mean, not usually with the X-Files. So there were some pretty scary episodes here. So that was awesome. There was continuity ahoy throughout this episode in terms of references back to previous episodes from days gone by. We had Chuck Burks getting mentioned for the first time in the series.
Yep.
We had a reference to X-Cops, if I'm not mistaken, with a reference to the claw scratch marks.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I did do that.
And so I loved that. And I like the fact even just like you have continuity. And this is something that I noted throughout your season, that there's continuity within your season, that a lot of episodes that you wrote refer to other episodes.
Well, we wanted to make sure that because it didn't always happen in the show. And it was always it kind of irked me always a little bit that, so we wanted to make sure that we were being really continuous with the whole that story would lead into another story, self-reference, reference back, reference forward, all that kind of stuff.
It also kind of makes this it's more of a cohesive unit. These six episodes, they all go together. We did write the episodes individually, but this was a very collaborative project in that regard. We wanted to make sure that came across. So I'm glad that you.
Yeah, I think they fit together like quite organically, too. It doesn't feel like things that are being sort of artificially tacked on, like in post-production or something like that. They feel like they're natural sort of things to come up. So
yeah, and only one or two times did we have to say, hey, can you put a line in your episode like in the past to kind of help me do this one thing I wanted to do in this future episode? We only had to do that a couple of times because we were pretty ahead of time. We planned it out pretty well.
Like the little germs are being planted, and one of them that's being planted in this episode is the mention of the old woman in the grocery store who we find out comes back into play in the final episode of the season.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's these little kind of foreshadowings and little sort of seeds planted throughout the season that I think rewards reviewing, or in this case, rereading, which I always enjoy being able to do. So I liked that aspect of it a lot. So that was all really super cool as well. So loved that aspect of it. Thought it was a very cool episode, and we found out it was a girl already.
We're not
waiting for the birth.
No. Well, the fandom kind of has decided.
Yes.
The fandom has spoken. Yeah. Yep. So we all kind of were like, they already know. So what's the point in surprising? Plus, like, we like the idea that Mulder could, be there for that, reveal. It was just, an extra moment.
Plus, in this day and age, I don't understand people who don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't either.
Like me. Yeah. I didn't know.
I don't understand.
I went into the whole thing, had no idea. Nope, didn't know until he was born.
You're insane.
That's awesome.
I'm a very much of a planner, though, so I don't know. Everybody's different, but
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, I think it probably is more common these days to know. So yeah, that was kind of like, again, it's like, good. Oh, good. Like, because people probably would know at that stage. Let's just get that established right now.
Well, and she is an advanced maternal age, as I was with my first and only pregnancy. So they find out a lot. They do a lot of testing when you're of advanced maternal age.
Well, and I think Scully would this time around make sure she knew everything there was to know about this baby.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She sure would. And can I just say, this is why it's great to have women writing these kind of stories.
Thank you. Because they
have some idea of what how pregnancy works and how like ovulation works and things like that. Yeah. So
it's amazing. Women there are people out there that understand how it works.
People who have uteruses.
And you can use them.
I don't understand it.
Imagine that. Well, you know, you understand more than the men. Let's say that.
That's true.
Definitely. At least you think that, at least like for those of us that haven't been through that, we at least have some sense that something happens and we should probably find out what that is if we're going to write about it.
Exactly. So,
I loved that about this. It's like, oh yeah, okay, actually everything makes sense. Isn't that nice for a change? So I loved that. So let's move on to, shall we move on to episode 3?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Which is entitled Age in Relation to Pregnancy, written by Miss Elise Wax. Hi, Elise.
Hi.
Hey. So you described this earlier as kind of like a Darren Morgan-esque episode. That sounds like something that you were sort of latched onto fairly sort of early. What sort of attracted you to that style?
I just love Darren Morgan's episodes. I'm one of those people, I don't take anything seriously. And so I always find like, I just get really involved in Darren's episodes, and it just seemed like a good fit until I started writing it. And then I was like, holy shit, now I have to be funny. So
I think you made it work.
I think it worked. I'm pretty proud of it. Even though this one came up third in the episode list, this was the second one I wrote. The first one I did was a number 5.
I think it was one of the last episodes to be finished.
It was the last.
Yeah. Was it? Did you find it more challenging to write?
Yes. It was definitely a challenge. First of all, I didn't really have a plot. So that's always a hard time. I wanted to, originally, the first thing that I wrote down in my notes, because I was just checking back over them, I wanted it to be something with a cult. Because I've always been obsessed with cults, and then I figured that would be a good way to bring Monica back in, since she has her expertise in cults. And then, you know, with all this political nonsense going on, it's like, I mean, he's basically a cult leader, so it all started to fall into place.
We have a cult tailor-made for us over here in America.
Yeah.
Convenient, but terrifying.
Yeah.
Very cool. And speaking about Monica, I was happy that she was alive again. Yeah. But I thought it was really interesting, Elise, how she is in this story, because she's back. Mm-hmm. And at first I was all, just us for Monica. And then... sort of near the end of the story, we see a little bit of an interesting side of Monica, where we see a little bit of maybe like her ambition. Like, you know, she's like trying to muscle Skinner out of the way in his own office kind of thing.
Yeah, well, part of it is because, you know, I established at the beginning that she didn't come out of it perfect. You know, she was scarred and she had some neurological problems, because I hate it when, you know, people in TV shows get injured really severely and then
or
the next
blown
week
up
and yeah, blown up by a missile.
You see their skull burn and then they come back to life.
Yeah. So I wanted there to be something, you know, to show that it wasn't an easy journey. Anyway, so she isn't in the field anymore, and so I figured that the best thing for her would be she's trying to go on like the assistant director track. And I thought it was fun to kind of, you know, show that she was being ambitious, but at the same time she was really deferential to Skinner, because this was her case.
Yeah.
She was the one who brought it to them and everything. So,
well, things are obviously still a little bit awkward between the two of them, I would imagine.
Yeah. One having shot the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of, I mean, at least you did refer to that as well, which I kind of appreciated. You just know if this was, you know, If this was Fox season 12 of The X-Files and Skinner and Monica were in a scene together, we would all pretend that nothing had ever happened. Yeah, and they would never be addressed in any way, probably. So I appreciated that, even though, yes, obviously it's a little weird that they're together, at least we addressed the what their history is, which I appreciated. So that was cool. So I was happy to see Monica back, and interesting to see like a bit of a different side of her. You know, she's looking to sort of move up the ranks within the FBI. It makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Within the context of sort of what happened to her. Let's talk a little bit about the politics of yes, of the episode, which you can't really avoid. It's not a super, like, there's no question really where we are standing here in this episode about who Trump is and what Trump is. Yeah. And this is not going to appeal to the Trump voter, I suspect.
And I'm okay with that because, you know, I remember when The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat aired, the fandom, you know, I thought it was a great episode. And I noticed on Twitter there were a few people in the fandom who were totally offended by it. And they, even though that wasn't really about Trump, I mean, they just happened to use Trump's words and they didn't like that. But, you know, it's so I don't really, and a lot of people were like, oh, well, you've just lost a fan. And I'm like, you know, I don't really care. Because I think for the most part, I think that most X-Files fans are not on the Trump side. And, you know, I'm not going to say Democrat or Republican or anything, because Trump is not a Republican. He's an insane human being. Barely human.
This is where it is. It's no longer between Democrats and Republicans. It's between the sane and the insane. Yeah, I think that's exactly. Sort of the point I think Elise is trying to. And we didn't actually ever name Trump by name.
No, we did not.
I mean, no, that's true.
It's clearly obvious. Yeah. But
well, the artwork sort of intimates that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
descriptions give away.
You haven't really, you don't see his face. You know it's him. But I have him on the back for, you know.
That's right. It's all very, and it's the same kind of way in the story. We'd have, you know, it's slightly subtle, but you know, we can kind of see which way it's going. But you know, I like that. You know, we don't have to be blunt, but you know, we it's clear which way we're going. We're not pretending otherwise. So I appreciate that
and
too.
And I tried to pull a Darren Morgan by pulling out an exact quote from one of Trump's speeches.
I have actually a really funny story about this. As I'm betaing Elise's story, I have to text her and be like, okay, isn't it horrible that I'm actually having to ask you which of these are real speeches? Because, you know, I think one or two of the speeches were actually word for word his actual speeches. And I'm reading this and I'm like, yeah, and I just had to roll my eyes because I'm like, this is ridiculous.
It was the part where he talks about the mother's giving birth to babies and swaddling them and then her and her doctor deciding to kill it.
Oh, dear God.
I think execute.
But that was real?
Execute.
Yeah, that's real.
Yeah, he actually said those words. Go back and read the script. That was an actual, I pulled it word for word from a video.
Oh, that is disturbing.
Yeah.
Like, but this, you have room for us in Canada, right? And you can come up there.
Yeah, we got plenty of crazy times of our own, but nothing like you guys have down there. Yeah. So. Happy up here. My doors are always welcome, open to welcome anyone that wants to come up and take refuge in my home.
I wanted to give Elise actually like a really huge kudos for taking this on, because I remember when we were sitting around talking about the idea of doing a political / Trump / episode, I was just like, this is going to be the hardest one. And I trying to do
a Darren Morgan. I mean, like, that's and to make also it funny. So hard. I commend you.
Yeah. I think she did a great job. And yeah. I also wanted to point out too that I really think one of my favorite things about that episode is at the very end when Mulder and Scully are having their conversation in bed and talking about how, well, you know, we could be wrong. Like, even having the wherewithal to admit, hey, we don't know everything. And I think that was a really sort of important line to have for the two of them, because that's what they would say. I think that's what they would say at the end. It felt very real to me, and I thought it was a really great way to pin an otherwise pretty one-sided episode, which luckily we're all on the same side. But it was a great ending. So,
I thought,
well done.
Though, that at the beginning, I set it up because, you know, they with Trump supporters, or I'm sorry, the president's supporters disappearing, you know, the first question, I think it was Scully asks, is, are we thinking that it's, you know, the liberal side of things, you know, she makes, because I wanted it to be very clear that, you know, regardless of the politics in it, they were interested in the truth and in justice.
Yeah.
And yep. It's, you know, it just happened that it was maybe the, you know.
There was also one that I don't have it in front of me, Elise, so forgive me. But one of my favorite line in that was like when Mulder asks her, "I don't, what offends you more, Scully, his thoughts on women or his thoughts on science?"
That was so great. Yeah.
It was so perfect. Yeah.
That was my favorite line too.
That's it's perfect for Scully too. That's exactly how it would be for Scully. You can just imagine, as it is for many of us. So I love that. I love, and also this sort of interesting idea, like. I'm curious about sort of this idea of the president as a monster. Like when you were writing it, Elise, did the monster sort of come to your head first before the idea of the president, or did they kind of both come at the same time, or did you decide you were going to write a political story and then he becomes a monster, or how did that all take place?
I'm trying to remember. I know that originally it was not necessarily going to be the president. It may have been somebody else in the White House. But it all kind of fell into place, and it was like, he's the goon in charge. So,
I think we agreed that it needed like an X-Files paranormal element. And I've always been subscribing to the theory that he must be an alien of some kind or a monster of some kind, because what else could possibly explain
it? Well, it's one of those things where, you know, it's so fantastic and ridiculous that it also wouldn't surprise me in the least if in reality we found out that he was some kind of monster wearing a human skin, because
I definitely wanted it to be something. I think it was because I had watched Forehead Sweat again, and I love that episode so much, and I was like, I can do this. I mean, we are literally living an X-File right now.
And it was interesting kind of the way you combine the concept of a monster with the concept of a president very much like Trump, because in the end, he's sort of, as a monster, driven by this need to sort of consume his followers to get all, and that's where all of his ideas come from.
Yeah.
That he doesn't have any of his own principles. He gets them from his followers, which is, I think, actually a really good image for exactly how Trump functions, too. So
exactly.
I love that part.
Yeah. I watch a little bit too much CNN during the day. So
we're sorry.
Yeah.
That can definitely be challenging. That can be pretty horrific. I mean, that's the whole kind of point of the story, though, isn't it? That, I mean, is it Scully kind of says at the end that that Mulder's story that the president is a monster is just as easy to believe as some of the crazy shit that the president spouts. And so that's a compelling concept, as we were saying.
Exactly, because at this point, you know, it still has to be X-Files, so Scully still can't actually see the monster.
Of course.
I loved that.
By this point, she kind of, you know, she trusts Mulder a lot more, and, you know, she doesn't have to do the science aspect of it, and, you know.
Yeah. I love that. I love the reference. Was it this was going to be Antarctica all over again?
Yeah.
I love that reference. I love any references to anything from before. And Dr. They comes back. Yay.
That was my favorite part. I had this idea and I was so excited about it, and I didn't even tell the other girls until they read it.
I screamed when I read it. I was so excited.
Cause I was just like, this is so perfect. He comes back for a kind of a cameo, and I was so excited that I couldn't wait until they read it. And I just remember getting texts like, holy shit.
I loved it. I loved Dr. They. So that, he fit perfectly in the story. He made perfect sense as character.
Exactly.
And he helped to sort of explain things at the end. But I mean, you've left the story in a very interesting place, right? It's left with we have a monster for a president, which I find, like, was there any thought that you would sort of have a more of a resolution, or was that always going to be how it ended?
Well, that's the great thing about X-Files, is that you can leave it without a solid resolution, and that's just kind of par for the course.
Yeah.
Because honestly, you know, there is no resolution. We still have him in the White House, and I still think he's a monster. And
well, and I like the idea too that it, like, people, it's one of those things that's like you're saying, like, the X-Files, it's still out there. It's definitely something people are going to be thinking about now, and they're going to be like, well, maybe.
I love it. I think it's awesome. And sort of obscure question for Elise as well. You mentioned at one point that Mulder and Scully were watching a rerun of The Simpsons. And when I was picturing the Trump monster, I was picturing, like, the aliens from The Simpsons, like Kang and Kodos. Were intending, or was that in my imagination?
That was not what I was intending. I just happened to watch Simpsons a lot. And so I was probably watching it while I wrote that scene, and was just like, I'm like, well, what happened? What could be before Trump? And hey, Simpsons, that's on right now.
Yeah, so. Fair enough. All right. I watch a lot of The Simpsons too. I mean, my husband and I basically speak to each other in Simpsons lines. So it's always in my head. So that's probably why I thought that. But I loved it. So, hey, whether it was an intentional reference or not, I still enjoyed it. So that was all good.
Yay.
That had to be a very tough episode to write. I can totally get that. And I think you pulled it off really well. I think it's a really interesting challenge to write a Darren Morgan style episode for the page rather than the screen, because so much of when we're watching a Darren Morgan episode, sometimes the humor is quite subtle.
Yeah.
And we know it's funny because the music tells us that it's funny.
Or because their expressions. That was one of the hardest things that I found, was that I could see the expressions that they would give one another, but I had to write it without being, you know, too long-winded or anything. So it was it was really tough. But I'm glad that you guys think I pulled it off.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just want to say for the record, I would never deign to think that I was on a level with Darren Morgan, because he is, like, above all else. But, you know,
of course.
I just...
Well, it's like a tribute. It's an homage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think Darren Morgan would really like it. And if he's listening, he should read it.
I absolutely love that. Yeah.
He should read it, and then he should come and join us on X-Files Diaries.
That would be great. Darren, give us a call.
We love you, Darren. Great. Thank you, Elise. Episode 4, The Other Side of Fiction, written by Casey. Now, this is what you guys described this as, your experimental episode. Tell me about sort of what the idea was behind that, Casey.
Oh, man. So this, the story behind getting here was, like, you know, like I think I had said before, I had the idea originally was to write a Monster of the Week, which was episode 2, and then a Slice of Life, because I those are interesting to me, and I would have loved to have watched that, which is sort of what I try to, the fanfic I try to write is something I'd like to have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Why I write a lot of sex. but like
word.
Right. So, but this one, I had a lot of trouble. I had Brood Parasite totally done. We had had, I think we had 3 or 4 episodes finished, and we kind of got together for dinner one night just to kind of hammer out some more details and, you know, start, you know, figuring out what was going on. And I remember going into it being like, well, guys, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do for episode 4. I was like, I don't think I can get, because we were trying to kind of aim for at least 10,000 words per episode. And I remember thinking, I've never in my life going to be able to write 10,000 episodes or 10,000 words about a, you know, in a slice of life. I'm like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And Annie and Elise were aware that I had been writing this college AU, this alternate universe college story, and that I'd been working on it.
And you were really into it.
I was really into it. I was having a lot of fun writing it. And we were sitting at dinner, and I don't remember which one of you, is maybe Elise, was like, you know what you should do? You should make episode 4 your college AU. Turn your college AU into the 4th episode. And I first was like, I love it. How the fuck am I going to make a college AU, an episode of the X-Files that makes no, you know.
That may have been Annie who said that. I was the one who said, make it a story that he's writing. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because we had to figure out, you know, a way to make it.
We had to fit it in because it was definitely one of those things that we can't just put in a college AU randomly.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Yeah. It had to make sense.
It's supposed to be a season of the X-Files. So we were, you know, so then we were debating, well, how do we make it, you know, how do we turn it into an episode that would make sense in the linear, you know, how it would work in everything else? And, you know, we have to set it in season 12, but it's not set in season 12. So how do we go about doing that? And then, you know, Elise said, what if Mulder writes it? Mm-hmm. And that sort of, yeah, I mean, so then I was like, I think I can do that. I can do that.
It's sort of, is it canonically accepted that Mulder kind of dabbled in writing while he was like doing nothing in his house? I think.
Right. I think, why wouldn't he?
I've always said.
Yeah. Well, and Scully all said to him in I Want to Believe Too, write it in a book. It was something that was presented and within canon. So we were like, this is reasonable that he could do something like this for Scully.
I mean, this is probably the stretchiest stretch of episode of any of the ones that we wrote. But, you know, when it came right down to it, I was having so much fun writing it. And I was like, oh, my God, if this could be a part of, you know, season 12, I would fucking love that.
Yeah.
Because what I had written already, I absolutely loved, and I was like, oh, the idea of just putting it into this project that I love was I loved it. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say too, I thought that the idea of doing this was just so like wonderfully meta, because I always told Casey too, I was like, this is the episode that is sort of the love letter to the fandom, because we know that the people like are the love letter to like fan fiction, because we know the people who are reading this, like 90% of our audience, are going to be expecting some sort of, let's just say it, some smut, some love story, some romance. Like, this is something that they're going to expect. And I mean, I knew going into this that we all agreed that these episodes, like Jen, you and I have discussed before, a typical X-Files episode is probably like, you know, 80% plot, 75% plot, 25% MSR. That's kind of how it rolls. We're like, you know, we're going to flip that on its head, because I think that's what people always wanted to see.
Well, that's the beauty. Yeah. Again, that's the beauty of fan fiction.
Exactly. I mean,
that's the wish fulfillment aspect of fan fiction. Right. That's what you.
Yeah.
So we all agreed it's the stretchiest episode, don't think any of our readers are going to mind.
No, I mean,
complaints from me.
Thinking tonight, it's a story that cannot be easily programmed, categorized, or easily referenced.
I think that Casey did a great job with setting it up and making it so that it's like, oh, here's a story, and you know, it's gonna fit in. And
yeah,
and that story, really cool. Once I embraced it, it was really fun to write, because you can, you know, you have this, it's, I mean, the X-Files to me has always been a love story, you know, sci-fi and that kind of stuff second. I think it's this epic romance if you think about it, and it always has been, which is the coolest thing. And that's what sucked me in. I was like, I'm a 18-year-old girl. You think I wasn't like super into sci-fi. Like, I was like, oh my God, he loves her so much. And so, you know, that's sort of what spoke to me. And so, you know, doing an episode that was just straight romance just really called to me and spoke to me. And I like, that's what I want to see on the screen if I had my druthers. And I know we stress a little bit about some of it, and I had to change some of it because we're going to talk about it because it's already aired. It's out there. You know, in the story, Scully loses her virginity, and that was a big deal. So, because I remember Anna and I texting back and forth, we're like, we're a little squicked out that Mulder is writing this.
Yeah.
And so that's sort
of... It kind of seemed like it was like this sort of masculine, like, fantasy.
Right. We were like, we didn't want it to be some weird wish fulfillment. It just felt kind of gross. Right. And so I was like, you know what we could do is they could write it together. Why wouldn't they, like, let's do that.
Yeah.
So Scully has the agency of writing that...
That particular part.
That particular part.
Yeah.
And then I grew to embrace that part of it. They're writing this love story for each other because they, they wasted so much time.
Yeah.
Right.
These characters wasted so much time.
They deserve it.
They deserve it. Well, they deserve, and they, you know, we all know they're meant to be. They've been meant to be since season one, but they, they wasted so much time. These other people. So I wanted to give them a way of like, you know, expressing that to each other that was, you know, just a.
Like the way they would have wanted it to be.
Right.
You know, like,
well, and who doesn't love college AU? My God.
It's
my
honestly.
It's my
favorite.
Yeah, it's my favorite subgenre of X-Files fan fiction, if I'm being honest.
I love the way you fit it in. And it's like a story within a story. So
I thought it was very cool, and I've never read anything quite like that. So I thought it was really creative the way you incorporated it into the season.
Thank you. It was the most fun to write, in my opinion, for me personally.
It was a lot of fun to read, I'll tell you that. It was just, it's one of those just very sort of fun romantic stories, and just, sometimes I find them like fun and easy to read, but that doesn't necessarily make them easy to write well, and I thought that this was very well written, and so I enjoyed it a lot. And so, yeah, it was very cool, very interesting. I liked the way that you sort of incorporated aspects of sort of canon X-Files to use for the college AU in terms of.
Well, I gave Chuck as Burks many shout outs as I could.
Yeah.
There's lots of shout outs in there. Chuck Burks is there.
Chuck Burks is there.
Somehow,
wouldn't want to meet a young Chuck Burks?
Young Chuck Burks is like, he's like a charming ladies' man.
Right?
I loved that.
Yeah.
I was like, for a second, I was like, is this the Chuck Burks I'm thinking of? And I'm like, yeah, no,
this
that's
is
Chuck Burks.
The Chuck
all right.
Burks you are thinking
that would be God. That would be the guy I'd be dating, probably.
Totally. Awesome. He'd be so my type. I mean, yeah. Like,
full
nerd,
head of hair.
Yes.
20 years, well, he's probably about 23 in this.
Yeah. Loved it.
But yeah. No, Chuck Burks was really fun to write. I was like, okay, we got it. I mean, like, if Chuck Burks was 23, this would be Chuck Burks. Mm.
I loved that. I thought it was not what I would have expected in terms of what his characterization would be, but I loved it. It made perfect sense.
And the other thing? I loved bringing in Melissa Scully because we lost her, and I, would have loved to have seen more between Scully and her sister. So more of that relationship. And that was another fun thing to write. I was like, oh, I can bring Melissa in. She's not dead in this in this world.
Oh,
awesome. Yeah, I loved that. I remember seeing something on social media once talking about all the wonders of fanfic, and one of the great things being your favorite characters back from the dead.
And
Melissa definitely, we never got enough Melissa. So that was awesome that she played a major role in the story. And we get, of course, some Mama Scully as well, which is always welcome. Daigou is still there.
He's still there. He's right at the beginning when Scully discovers the story.
Yeah.
He is at her feet.
I noted that and appreciated it. That was all excellent. So I appreciated all that. So, yeah, I thought it was all really cool and fun, and like kind of a more sort of traditional genre of fanfic, but still fit well within the context of the story. So
thank
I loved
you.
It.
I'm glad we made it work because it was a labor of love.
Yeah,
it was sexy as hell too.
it was
awesome. So that was great. I loved episode 4. Episode 5 entitled Harlequin, written by Elise Wax. Elise.
Yeah.
You seem to be interested in clowns to me, specifically evil clowns.
My life, my professional life has been evil clowns for the last few years. For those that don't know, I just wrote The World of It, which is the official behind the scenes making of art book for It and It Chapter 2. I was actually just in early discussions for the book when we were discussing the season and our episodes and whatnot. So it was weighing heavily on my mind and I couldn't talk about it. So I'm like, I'll write about evil clowns. Before that, I had written about evil clowns for Sci-Fi Wire. I covered the first It pretty heavily, the first of the 2016. And before that, I had written about the evil clowns that were like randomly showing up on street corners, just standing there staring.
That story's so creepy.
Because that's like a real thing, right?
That was a real thing that happened in I think it was early 2010s. Mm-hmm. And I had like a whole beat on it kind of. So I had been sitting with evil clowns for a long time.
I love it. I love what is it, Elise? I mean, you're the expert. We have we're lucky to have an expert on evil clowns with us this today. And what is it? What is it about evil clowns that is so fucking terrifying?
You know, I don't know.
You're not afraid of them.
I'm not. I am.
Are you, Casey?
No.
Terrified.
Clowns don't scare me. I mean, they're a little creepy. I mean, yeah. I don't get it. I would never be a clown. I don't think I'd invite one to my child's birthday party.
Yeah.
No.
But if I see one on the street, I'm not like, holy shit, I'm crossing it.
Do you remember, though, when that clown terrorized me at Spooky? Were you both there for that?
Yeah, but that's because you reacted.
Yeah.
I know. But I still...
What happened?
Well, I don't want to take too much time, but we were just waiting outside the thing, and there was like a clown inside the hallway, and he was just staring at me, and he noticed that I was trying to hide like behind Casey or somebody. And
I'm easy to hide behind.
She's pretty tall. And so every time I would move, this clown would just kind of step over and get back in my line. Like, he knew. He targeted me.
Creepy. Well, yeah, but I mean, that's like scare 101. If you get a reaction out of someone, you keep going at it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why my husband always hides behind me when we go to Universal Studios, because everyone always thinks, oh, look,
I can't go to those
the
things.
Girl will scare the girl, and I have no startle response, so I never respond to it, and he gets off scot-free because he will scream.
I will go to those parks with you. This is the new plan. Yeah. They will still come after me, though.
Yeah, they will. Yeah. And I will laugh. Yeah. I will.
She'll love it. Anyway,
so I've just been deeply involved in evil clown culture for a while, and it was on my brain, and
that's a great opportunity to have Mulder be professor.
I loved the clown history, which I learned stuff from reading this fanfic, which I like the eggs and stuff. Everything was really very cool. I loved learning that stuff.
I was really concerned that it was going to come off like an actual lecture and be boring, but
Professor Mulder can lecture me anytime.
Oh, anytime.
Yeah. I thought it was all fascinating, actually. I thought I could not get enough, frankly, of all of the clown stuff. I thought it was really, really interesting. And the fact that it was coming from Mulder just made it interesting and sexy at the same time.
Yes, all of that was 100% true, all of the clown history.
Mm-hmm. Wow. This is really cool. I'm going to read more about this thing. Read more about these sorts of things on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Very cool. I mean, you can't go wrong with an evil clown, in my opinion. I was really quite scared the whole time. Mm-hmm. As Annie alluded earlier, this is kind of the episode relationship-wise between Mulder and Scully that things get a little on the tense side.
Yeah.
Because there's a bit more of a discussion in this episode of sort of Mulder's obsessive tendencies and the ways that they can potentially be toxic. Mm-hmm. What was your vision for how that issue would sort of play out in this episode?
Well, this was the one that I wrote first, so I think in my mind I was still seeing it closer to the beginning of the season and how they were still kind of learning to come together. Obviously, it didn't work out that way, but I think it worked regardless. It felt very natural, you know, for him to not be able to sleep one night. And so he tries so hard, but finally he goes downstairs. And then when Scully finds him, he's like, nope, I'm not going to fall into this. And he gets up and gives her a kiss and all of that. And, you know,
I think it was important in showing that he's making an active decision to choose her.
Yeah.
Like he said he would. So I really liked it. When I was reading it, I was like, oh God, Elise, we agreed we're not going to do this. What are you doing? But I thought she handled it really, really well. And it felt very real. And it felt like something they would really say to each other. Mm-hmm. And then they now have the tools and the ability.
Yeah. Natural progression of season 11 where they, you know,
they actually talk
to one another. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, exactly, because they have a pretty bad fight, but then they kind of actually talk about it afterwards and resolve it, which was nice.
Yeah.
With the help of Dagoo, because Mulder went for a little walk with Dagoo and came back with a clearer head about the whole thing, I thought.
Dagoo was the anchor for this episode.
Wasn't he? Wasn't he? He really was, wasn't he?
The very first part I wrote was the opening scenes, and I could see, like, everything where, you know, Mulder's feeding Dagoo, at the dinner table and stuff. And that just, it's so rang true. So he was just, and then, you know, he went out with Mulder on the walks when Mulder found the clowns, and he was the linchpin for this episode.
She really was, once again, hero in my opinion. Yeah. So yay, the goo, co-star. Yeah. I loved it. It was really cool. And again, it's like the X-File comes to them to a certain extent, that there's this creepy clown hanging around their place. Although he turns out not to be connected with the case that Mulder's working on, in an interesting twist.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. No, I gave all your spoiler alerts. Too bad.
If you already gave the spoiler.
You're still listening.
Well, because I couldn't figure out, when I started writing it with the idea that an evil clown or a scary clown is kind of stalking them at their house. But I couldn't quite figure out how to make that X-Files-y other than just hanging out. So that's when I had them, I had Mulder join Skinner with the profiling, and he gets frustrated, and, you know, it turns out that they are not connected, but it just happens to be one of those fun X-Files coincidences where there's clowns, real clowns over here, and ghost clowns in the forest.
I remember too, we were discussing, because this was the first one you wrote, and I was already, they were already aware that I was having a home invasion in episode one, and we agreed, we're like, we're not doing another home invasion.
No,
we don't need any more home invasions. So we loved the idea that it was kind of more of just like a cold open type creepy, you know, like lead in to what we were going to see. So I thought I thought that worked really well.
Thanks.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. And it kind of like, if I was like a member of the clown community, I would appreciate that there's like not just evil clowns in the story. That's, some of them are quite benign.
That's what I was, you know, kind of going for, is that, you know, here's this clown, and sure, technically he's probably a ghost, but he has no ill intentions. He just needs a little help. Mm-hmm. And I like that you know, Mulder helped him out. With some help from Dagoo.
It would be Mulder.
With a little help from Dagoo. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was, I thought it was very cool. I'm not sure if I can handle your book, Elise, because I'm terrified of everything to do with it. Like, I can't even look at ads on TV.
I need to warn you. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I was looking through her book the other night, and I'm like, thanks for the nightmares, dude, because it was scary. There was some scary stuff in there, man.
I'm quite proud of that.
But that's why it's such a popular franchise. People love to be scared.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt, knowing your talent, at least, that it is an excellent book. I'll just have to take it on faith. But everyone who's not a big baby like me should definitely go and acquire it.
Put it on a high shelf like I did, so my kid wouldn't see it and never sleep again.
And you know exactly where it is, so it can't get you.
Exactly. Pennywise is contained within the pages.
Yeah.
He can't get out.
Okay, good. All right. I've got that on authority, so that's good to know. I feel better already, actually. Okay, let's move on to episode 6, the season finale. Unsere Freiheit, if my university German serves me correctly. Thank you.
Very impressive.
I was really excited that I knew what that meant, that I was like, is that going to be our freedom? And I was like, well done. And University German coming to why German? Is there a reason why German was the language you chose, Annie?
Well, I knew that German was a language that Scully knew, and so it could help later. Later in the story, there was a bit where Jackson mentions the words "our freedom." I knew "our freedom" was going to be the title, and then when I started to figure out what I was going to pick for a language, I just kind of unraveled as I wrote the story. But I wanted "our freedom" for sure, because it was kind of a direct knockoff / repair of my struggle, because we're no longer struggling, people. We are on the road to freedom. So that was kind of my thinking behind that title. Obviously the German words come into play later when Jackson talks about how the plaque in his mother's house, and how freedom was finding him, having him come to her. But the freedom, the theme of freedom, I thought was actually more appropriate for Scully throughout this episode. Like, my entire driving force behind this episode was her being free of Smoking Man. That was what I wanted to do with this episode. Like, everything else kind of came secondary and kind of came along. Like, my main idea was the idea of her being free of Smoking Man. I remember, like, I wrote this little short fic after My Struggle 4 aired, where she was just talking about the chip and how no matter what happened, as long as she had this damn chip in her neck, she was always under his thumb. And that, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, that always just kind of stuck with me that, like, we're never going to kind of be to the end of this. We're never going to be free of this until that's out. And so I was kind of just trying to think of a way that we could get there. So that was sort of the whole impetus behind that title and the whole episode. So.
Yeah, you cover a lot of territory in a relatively short story, in pretty efficient and effective fashion, if I do say so. I mean, we've got, like, John Doggett kind of sort of comes back. There's, mm-hmm. like, there's callbacks to so many stories through the chip records. You know, we're going back as far as Scully's abduction, which you know I love whenever there's a callback to that. There's a mention of the episode Irresistible in there, Scully's cancer. There's several references to the events of En Ami. And we even get a mention of the events in Hollywood AD. It turns out that's when William was conceived, which I love. It makes total sense.
You know, it's funny. This all kind of worked out for me because I kind of wanted to make it. This is all kind of how I think. This is where I think the truth lies. And this is my interpretation of it in terms of what the chip is doing. And when I started to think about the events of NME, what exactly Smoking Man was doing, I kind of wanted to erase a lot of the preconceived notions that people might have about what might have possibly happened. I always believed that what happened was that something was going on with her chip. That's just kind of where my brain will let me go. I think a lot of people might agree with me.
There's proof.
Yeah. And it actually kind of fits with the theme of the episode because we meet the old woman who's super, super, super old, but she looks 60, you know, and all of the answers are right there. It's like Scully says, it's just the answers are all there. And so you just have to know where to look. And so that's kind of what I wanted to do. I wanted to say, this is the information that we have been given. This is an actual really good explanation for what's going on with Scully and how we're going to sort of get out of this. This was probably one of the most difficult things I've ever taken on. So I'm super proud of it. And I'm glad I decided to do it because I think that, I don't know, it makes me kind of feel better about a lot of the things that we were given. So I was I was really happy to take a crack at it. And I'm glad that we included some mythology in our season. So,
yeah, I mean, like this is the best mythology episode I've seen in a long time.
Well, thank you.
Mythology that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. My God. How do we even know it's the X-Files at this point?
Sorry, I might have over-explained, but you know.
No, I loved it. I love the fact that, I mean, you tied things together really elegantly, I thought, because there's all the great stuff with the chip, which is, you know, ties together so many different aspects of Scully's story throughout, like, all 12 seasons. And I love the fact that we brought up Scully's immortality, which is like, that was my favorite part of the whole story. It was like, Scully's immortal, I knew it.
I had to play with that. I had to play with that. As much as I don't necessarily think that when Darren Morgan wrote that, he had any idea what was going on. I don't believe that.
No,
but I do think,
I don't think he did.
In the grand scheme of things, with the sort of story that I came up with, I feel like it makes sense that's why Clyde Bruckman might have said that. And all of these things that sort of happened to her kind of, you know, line up with that theory. So,
yeah. It all ties together with, you know, the chip story, which is terrific. And we even get like a pretty good explanation for sort of Scully's miracle pregnancies. That's, you know, maybe she wasn't infertile after all. So there was kind of an interesting discussion of that. And, you know, again, this is what happened when you have women writing. We can actually get like some kind of an attempt, at least, of an explanation for how a woman who thought she was infertile can wind up having two babies, one of which happens when she's in her 50s. But again, it's that whole immortality thing comes back in as well. So,
right. I always found it really funny how everyone on the internet was like, oh my God, it's so crazy that she's pregnant at 54. This is the most crazy thing I've ever heard. And I'm like, this is the X-Files. This is the craziest thing that you've ever heard. Like, I couldn't understand that. So to me, it never really bothered me because it was just one of those things that was just like, hey, you know, it's a miracle. It's one of those cool things, more than impossible, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to explain this because there are people out there that apparently need this explained. And so I was like, you know what? Going to throw some stuff out there. Let's see if it sticks. It made sense to me. I feel like it actually works with her story. And it kind of makes sense to why she got pregnant when she did. So I kind of liked that I was kind of able to fit that in with the chip and make that all hopefully make sense. So
I thought it was very cool and very interesting and fit in really well. In addition to all of the, like, you've packed a lot of really interesting mythology answers in, but then we get a lot of terrific sort of family drama as well between Mulder and Scully and Jackson. First of all, can I say thank you for the fact that Mulder and Scully address him as Jackson and not William, because that makes sense to me.
You're very welcome.
Yes.
We all agreed that was the way this would be, because that's the way real life would be. I don't think they would be calling him William, and I don't think he would want to be called William. So they can refer to him as William when they're talking about him and, you know, his prior life when Scully had him. But now that's not his identity anymore. And so we wanted to be sure to make sure that was kind of the way he was being addressed. We wanted to also make sure I keep saying we. This is a collaborative project. But I wanted to be sure to give his parents, his adoptive parents, respect. Because I do think that a lot of people kind of overlook that. I think 10, 13 in season 11 tried not to overlook it by giving him a new name. And I feel like a lot of people just kind of ignored that. And I didn't like that. So I wanted to kind of make sure that carried through season 12.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. I liked the way that, you know, the parents had a role to play in the story and all of that sort of thing. So that was all very cool. And I also, it's interesting. I mean, you said earlier that you guys had a sort of a vision that at some point in the course of the season, there would be a reunion between Jackson and his biological parents. But it's interesting the way you've done it. I mean, I've seen fanfics where, they find Jackson and everything is happy. Yours was not quite as simple as that. But why did you sort of go the road that you went?
Realism?
Yeah, it's not realistic. I know that's what a lot of people want to happen and what a lot of people think would happen, but we all agreed that that's not what would happen. I don't think that Jackson would be very willing to just welcome these strangers back into his life. I think that, and I also truly believe that Mulder and Scully would have both been letting him go over all of these years. I think that's what a lot of season 11 was about. And I think a lot of fans had trouble kind of coming to terms with that. And I think what I wanted to do was make it realistic in that, hey, this is something that would happen down the road. This is something that Jackson might seek out. He might want to find his parents because he no longer has his parents, his adoptive parents who raised him in the picture anymore. And he wants to help. I mean, we there's this reason that he's contacting them, which is this, we actually have this thing that we need to do. We need to go and find these families and warn them. And it's also a way of kind of redeeming Jackson because, he was kind of a little bit of an asshole. So we like the idea of him trying to do something, sort of paying it forward, doing something right. Because I do believe in the end, he is Mulder and Scully's son. So he's a good guy. But the idea of them, it being on his terms, it has to be on his terms, not their terms. And I really wanted to make that clear. So this was a process, it was something. Oh, the cat. Sorry, the cat was up by Elise.
And I'm really allergic.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Leia likes to do that. I should have not given you that chair. She interrupts the podcast all the time. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
But yeah, so that was our thinking behind that. We know there were boxes we wanted to hit. We wanted there to be a reunion. We just wanted it to fit with the tone of the show. And we wanted him definitely to be able, Scully, to see his face, which was, I worked that jail scene with him in the jail was the first thing I wrote for this episode because I loved the idea that he is behind bars and there's still another barrier between them. She gets to see him, but she can't get to him. And I thought that symbolically that kind of worked in terms of where they were in their relationship at that point. And then it kind of, as they moved forward through the months, through the rest of the episode, that we could see him get there. I wanted him to realistically get there. So
yeah, I liked that. I liked the way that it wasn't an easy path and that it was, not at the very first opportunity or even the second opportunity that suddenly everything would be fine. So yeah, I thought it fit much. I mean, we've talked on the show before that I am a lover of angst. And normally I am not a fan of the happy ending, but I actually really liked this particular happy ending because it did feel kind of earned and realistic. And I realized it's not that I don't like happy endings on The X-Files. I've just never seen one that was X-Filesy enough.
Yeah.
Like if we look, for example, comparing it with like Essence and Existence, where there's all these horrible things going on for the full two-parter, and then boom, at the very end, we have a happy scene with Mulder and Scully and their baby. And I am not as enamored with that scene as a lot of folks are. I think because it does seem to kind of come out of nowhere, and
you
I can't
recalibrate.
Shift gears.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
Whereas
completely.
This makes a lot more sense. It's a lot more gradual. By the end, I was like, please let them all get back together. So I was very happy they did it again. Degoo plays a role, I feel, there at the end with the reunion. He's making Jackson feel welcome by being all excited that he's there. And the hero again, Degoo, I just have to say.
Yeah.
So I loved that, loved every aspect. Oh, yeah, and that story, The Runaway Bunny, which is like a real book, right? A real kid's book.
Yeah. Actually, it's over there. At least, sorry, I actually pulled it out. This actually is something that came to me in like a flash of light. I was like trying to think of a way to tie the cold open together with the rest of the story, because I have the scene where we have Jackson as a young kid and his mother's talking to him about, you know, if you run away, I will always find you. And yeah. I just, that really spoke to me. I was literally laying in bed reading this book to my 3-year-old, and I thought of it. This is just goes to show how much this is on my brain. And there was this line at the end of the book that really spoke to me, because it was not expected. It was the little boy bunny says, if you become a tightrope walker and walk across the air, I will become a little boy and run into a house. And the mom says, if you become a little boy and run into a house, I will become your mother and catch you in my arms and hug you. And I was suddenly just like, that's what needs to happen. She needs to become his mother. It's not, you aren't already his mother. You need to become his mother. And so when I read that line, I was just like, yeah, that sounds kind of how I want this story to go throughout this episode. So
yeah.
When I read that, then the Jackson story started to sort of come together. So.
Yeah, I thought that was very, very cool. I liked that aspect of it. I liked every aspect of that episode, as I do the others as well. But this one in particular seemed very ambitious in terms of how many different sort of plot points it was hitting, how many different emotional sort of points. And I thought it was all really well done. I loved it. It's my favorite season finale of a lot of seasons.
Thank you.
I
wow.
can't think of too many season finales that would top this if this was produced. So in terms of the storytelling, top notch. I mean, and this is the wonderful thing when fans are doing the writing. In many cases, fans understand the story better than people who are paid to write the show. That's just the reality of the situation. Mm-hmm. And it shows throughout season this season 12. I think it shows that it's being written by people that understand the show and understand storytelling as well. And I was really very impressed by the whole project. I was excited about it when I heard that it was happening, and I feel like the execution was really there as well. So I thought it was really very cool. Now, obviously, you guys don't have access to an unlimited budget in a TV studio, so you're not able to produce it. Are there things that you do differently when you're writing something for the page than you would if you were writing something for the screen?
I mean, yeah. I mean, well, and fanfic is a different beast in that it's like, again, and I keep hitting this on the head, but it's that wish fulfillment aspect of mm-hmm. it. And, you know, I went to film school. I think Elise went to film school mm-hmm. as well. So there, you know, I studied mostly features, so I don't know the TV side as well, but there's a lot more that goes into it. I do have a lot of writer friends that are in TV rooms, and for them, you know, it's a job. I think as fans, we kind of live it as it's our hobby. It's what we enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, TV writers, and I give them all the credit that I can. It's a hard job. Mm-hmm. Especially, and I know a Dead lot of lines. Our writer friends are, yeah. And like a lot of showrunners are crazy and not, you know, I mean, like
yes.
running totally dysfunctional rooms. And so,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say that The X-Files was like that. But you know, it's a, it's a different beast writing fanfic. And you don't have, the great thing is we don't have a showrunner saying, no, this is where it's going to end. You know,
and we
is,
don't have a line producer giving us a budget. And we don't have a network. Mm-hmm.
We don't have network notes.
Yeah. And, we can write a really smutty scene because we aren't on the
and
air.
We don't have standards and practices saying, no, I'm sorry. You can't do that on a hillside in Scotland.
No standards and practices around here, baby. But you did kind of incorporate a visual element to the season by creating this artwork, by having the a different piece of art for each episode. And that was you, Annie, that created all of those.
Brilliant artwork. Oh. Yes.
Well, thank you.
Pretty amazing. I mean, yeah, it's just like you're disgustingly talented. It's there's the writing, there's the drawing, there's the podcasting. It's like, what can she not do?
She is making a coup happen. No, this is actually funny because I don't know why. I don't regret it for a minute, but I randomly, we were texting. I was like, hey, should I do some artwork for these? And they were both like, yes, do it. Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit, I just committed to this.
I have to.
And I was like, well, dang, because I don't know why I had in my mind doing it, like, just because I had just gotten the fabulous J.J. Lendl, I have to give him a shout out, poster for Home. Novum Domum is obviously like an homage to his. I kind of wanted to make it kind of fit and feel like that one. And I was like, I had that image in my head and I was like, well, you know, if I do mine, I'm going to have to do all of them because that's not cool.
Yeah.
And so I was suddenly like, okay, well, how would this work? And I really just kind of wanted to, you know, kind of like how we did the episodes for each. They were all very different.
And Annie was also really collaborative. I mean, she would ask us for your episode, what do you want to see? Do you have anything in your head? And I remember for both of mine, I kind of dictated almost everything. I mean, not to be like, take over and be like, well, this is what I want to see. But it was, you know, I mean, you were like, it's your episode. I want you to be happy with it. And so, you know.
These were for them. I remember specifically with Casey's with episode 4. I was like, okay, well, we're going to go full romance with this, right?
Yes.
And I remember Casey was like, yeah, lean into the romance. And I was like, oh, I will lean. And then I remember with Brood Parasite, you had this very, very specific image of looking down through a tree branch and seeing Mulder and Scully underneath the nest. And I was like, I think I came up with the idea of making a comic book panel.
You made it, the comic book panel. And then like I was like, it would be really cool if the shadow of this pterosaur is the only thing you saw, but that was over Mulder and Scully and they're looking up like, holy shit.
Like, what is this? We don't know what it is, but we kind of
have
the
comic
idea.
Book, I was like, oh my God, it turned out so amazing. Oh, it looks, thanks. I love it.
Yeah.
And Dagoo was there too.
And Dagoo was there. I don't remember if you, I remember specifically Elise saying that she's like, you better put a Dagoo in mine. And he didn't fit in the Trump poster. No. So I was like, okay, he will be in Harlequin. I promise. He's quite prominent.
Elise's idea to make it like the old circus ads, which is genius.
Again,
and
because
so good.
I was deeply enamored in the world of It at the time, and there was a lot of that in the book and in all the promotional stuff. So I was like, you know, we went through, and I was sending her like old poster, circus posters, and saying something like this.
Yeah,
and so she took like the color scheme and the design and everything.
Yeah, the sepia tone, everything about it is amazing.
I remember the only one that you didn't give me any direction on was the Trump one. I remember because we were all around dinner, and I'm like, I want to kind of make it look like a political cartoon, like a caricature style. And you were like, yeah, that's fine. And she's like, but we were like, we want to put that image of Mulder and Scully in the red hats, which could be a very controversial image. So I wanted to make sure that their faces looked kind of offended and silly so that we knew when we saw this that this was a parody. And then the idea of putting the title across the hats kind of made it, got rid of some of the terribleness of the hats.
Yeah.
But I remember the hats being the only thing that you were like, they got to have those hats on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then.
Because the hats are such a visual thing.
Yeah. And then as far as
episode 4, I remember you'd finished it, and I remember texting you one night and being like, can you turn it into a book? Make it like a book cover.
Yeah.
And you're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm like a stick figure. This is like the most like I can draw. And so I was like, I doodled something terrible, but luckily she got the idea and turned it into something that looks far better.
Well, it turned into an actual romance novel. We were like, okay, let's make this look like a romance novel. And so that was a great idea.
Yeah. With more clothes.
And then we added, I remember the glasses on Mulder was a last minute.
Debated.
The glasses were the key.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a version with no glasses. There's a version with glasses.
We went glasses.
We went back and forth, and we were like, he's got
it. It was a solid 3-for-3 vote.
Yeah.
On glasses.
Oh, yeah. that was definitely the way to go. Yeah, no. Young Mulder and glasses, hello.
Yeah.
Good choice. Good
and
choice.
Then the excellent last choice. The last one was, I think, my that one I had in my head because it was just like a classic sort of, I don't know if you know the artist Drew Struzan, but he does a lot of those kind mm-hmm. of old-timey, like 80s movie posts. Like he did a lot of the old Star Wars ones, Indiana Jones. It's essentially just like your heroes' faces. Like we got faces, we got them kind of bleeding over the border. And I definitely was like, we got to have Skinner. We got to have, you know, Doggett in the
smoke.
We didn't really even talk about
in
Doggett,
the
but in the smoke in the background. And I didn't want to have Smoky Man's face because he's not there. But I wanted him to sort of be present. So I liked the idea of having the cigarette and the hand on that one. And yeah, so they all like to me, I think they all kind of had a different feel and they all kind of fit together really well.
Yeah, I would never know they were all done by the same artist if I didn't know any different because they all look so different.
Well, that's actually the best compliment you could give me. So thanks, Jen.
Wow, I did it accidentally. So
and
that's
we,
great.
We do actually have all these up on Redbubble for we're put, you know, selling prints and stuff
Holy
with people.
Shit.
And
100% of the proceeds are going to Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
Yep. So we're not making any money. Chris Carter and 1013. Fox lawyers, don't come after us. We're making zero money.
No money.
It's all going to charity.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be buying probably the whole set in some form. Yeah. So they're
it's
all
funny. My husband is absolutely in love with them and wants to put them. He's like, I want these up in our house.
Aww.
I know. It's sweet. Yeah. It's like, you're in luck. We're going to
Great. Especially anything with Dagoo. Anything with Dagoo in it is getting an extra large size. I'll tell you that right now. So that he's in two of the posters. So, yeah, those are the ones that I'll spend the most money on, but I'll buy them all. So, because they're all excellent.
I already have a place picked out for all the stickers, and I'm already buying all of them as notebooks because I use notebooks a lot, and I want to take them around. And so that when my friends are like, what is that on the front of your notebook? I can say, well,
let me tell you all about it.
Yeah. Check it out. Yeah.
And then I love it. Wish it's they just never another way. Asked.
Yeah, I mean it's a work of art and it's promotional at the same time, so what more could you ask for? I mean, it to me the idea when you guys were telling me about this concept, when you told me that there was going to be the artwork, when you Annie, you sent me the very first one for episode one, I was like, oh my god, this is on like a whole other level now, because I mean, like, the stories, I hadn't read any stories yet at that point, but the fact that you were doing like this super ambitious artwork as well, it's like, this is no joke. You guys are not messing around here. This is like a serious undertaking.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it took a year for a reason.
Yeah.
Yep.
It definitely shows. I mean, it's this is not something thrown together. This is something that's, you know, well organized, well promoted, and well received. So the next natural question then is, are we going to get a season 13?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Do we have another year?
Yeah. Wait, you know, it's funny because my personal feeling on this is like, I love the idea of continuing Mulder and Scully forever, but I'm also kind of tied to the idea of, hey, let's leave them somewhere really nice and wrapped up very, like, where I think people would want them to be and just leave them the fuck alone. That's kind of like my camp. So I don't know. I'm not ruling it out, ladies, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm in the same place. I feel like we have a really good season here and it ends in like the perfect place. But it was so much fun to do.
Yeah.
And I love the posters that Annie did. So maybe if she'll just make posters for all of my fanfic, I'll be happy with that.
That'd be great.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I like where we ended it. I mean, I could always come up with more ideas. There's always more ideas, but
never say never.
Never say never.
Oh. As Reggie Murgatroyd would say, there's always going to be more X-Files. Or wait, did Scully say that? Scully said that. I got that. I got
absolutely.
One of them said it in Lost Art of Forehead Sweat. Yeah. Sorry, I really botched that. It's all good.
All right, it's all good. I think it's great, and you've answered that in a nice sort of leave the door slightly open fashion, in like that sounds like something
classic
very
X-Files.
Much that we would hear. Yep, very X-Filesy. So I appreciate that, and I also appreciate the fact that we don't have to worry about whether like Jenna Anderson is available or not. That we can just make
the beauty
her available.
Of it. Yeah,
I love it. Wave the magic wand, boom, she's there. So I love that. To wrap up, we're going to move on to our regular segment, Hot Take.
Lay it on me.
I'm going to ask you gals just one simple question, and you just answer with whatever sort of pops into your head. So whatever your hot take is in response to the question. So I'm going to start with Annie, I think, because she knows how hot takes work. And it's going to be the same question for everybody. And so the other gals get a little extra time to think about
that's
it.
That's not nice.
Yeah, well, someone has to go first. And I know you're up to the challenge.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. I'll support your coup when you try to take
Actually, I like the way this is all really unfolding. It's just not the way I plan, but it's certainly going well for me. Okay, here's the question for each of you. You've written your scripts. You're ready to go for season 12. Who do each of you pick, and it can be anybody, to direct your episode?
Oh, damn.
And you can pick yourself if you want to as well.
Well, I mean, Glenn Morgan and James Wong would have to direct Novum Domum, right?
Nice.
I guess Glenn Morgan.
Yeah, because I don't think Wong directed.
He didn't direct, right? Let's say Glenn Morgan can direct episode one. And then I like that guy who did Plus One. Let's say Kevin Hooks. Let's bring him back. He did a great job with Plus One. He can do the finale.
That is not an answer I expected. So well done. Good job.
I didn't say Chris Carter, which I hope you didn't expect.
So. Nobody expects
that. I wasn't sure
what
to expect. I wasn't expecting Kevin Hooks. So that's what the hot take's all about.
I thought he did a great job and he should have done more. So I'm sticking with
that's
it.
That's a great answer. What about you, Casey? Who would you pick for your episodes?
You know, for a brood parasite, I would probably have to go with Rob Bowman.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's sort of the perfect wheelhouse for him. And then for the other side of fiction is so out there, I'd have to pick a female director.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I mean, obviously. That's sort of tough. I mean, there's not very many of them. Maybe Patty Jenkins. Mm-hmm. I think she could probably pull it off.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Definitely. You know, we can use anyone that we want to.
I'd do it myself, then. Like, I went to film school. Let's do it.
Hell yeah. I feel like you're ready. Let's do it. What about you, Elise? Who are you going to use for your directors?
Definitely Darren Morgan for Age in Relation to Pregnancy, because, I mean, come on.
Obviously.
The man.
And then it would have to definitely be a horror director for Harlequin. I would think either... John Carpenter, or it might be a little bit too in the wheelhouse, but Andy Muschietti, who directed the new It movies.
Nice. Hey, why not? You know, he knows his stuff. So
exactly. It might be
that
a little
sounds
bit,
good to me.
Yeah, I don't want to pigeonhole him in anything, but
okay, let's just make the offer to him.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I feel like he won't be able to resist once he reads the script.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on board with it. So those are all the great answers, guys, for your hot takes. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about that we haven't mentioned already? Anything else that you'd like to say about X-Files season 12?
I just want to say, if people listening have never read any fanfic before, that give it a shot. You might find yourself liking it, right? You never know.
Listen,
so I think we did a great job.
I think so too. I think fanfic is one of those things that there's still sort of a culturally kind of a you know, people don't always look, you know, they look down on it. And
it's changing.
It is
lot,
changing.
Though.
It is changing. It's like meeting people on the internet now. Yeah. It's not so weird like it used
it's
to
not
be.
Like too shy.
Right. I mean, it's definitely finding its way more into the, like, people say fanfic and people know what they're talking about. Whereas it used to be like, what fan? Or you could be like David Duchovny, fan fiction.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fan fiction.
Fan fiction.
But no, I think you're absolutely right, Casey, that fan fiction. Now I'm doing it is getting a lot more appreciation. When we had like Archive of Our Own winning a Hugo Award. Yeah. So
And I know Sci-Fi Wire does a semi-regular column about fan fiction. So
I think was that Medium? Some other has a fully dedicated fandom like sub website that deals in a lot of fan fiction stuff.
And there's a lot of great stuff out there. I mean, people need to go search it out and find it.
I mean, honestly, one of the first literary revelations of my life was reading a piece of fan fiction when I was like, oh my God, you can do this. And it wasn't like I had the realization that, oh, you can do fan fiction. It was the way this author wrote just struck me. Mm-hmm. And it was a yeah, like I said, a literary revelation.
The first thing I ever wrote was my X-Files spec script. Mm-hmm. I didn't even really know what fan fiction was. I was just like, oh, I could totally write this. And now I'm a professional writer and people pay me small amounts of money to do it. So,
but you're still writing fan fiction as well, Elise, which is great.
Just for fun. And you know, not when I'm in the middle of a book, but
that's fair enough. We can't expect that too much. But I think it's great. And I think that, I mean, I think that X-Files season 12 kind of demonstrates that fanfic can be a lot of different kinds of genres and can touch on a lot of different themes, and that it can be very well written by successful, high achieving women. So I appreciate you.
I think most fanfiction is written by women.
Yeah.
At least X-Files anyway.
Yeah.
And shout out to the small number of men that are writing it too. Yes. So they are welcome to the community, but it is definitely dominated by women.
Yes, yeah. That's definitely true.
So thank you to each of you for joining us on X-Files Diaries. Annie, otherwise known as Admiralty. Thank you. I might be talking to you again. I think you're going to be on X-Files Diaries again at some point.
Possibly.
If I'm lucky, I'm going to invite you back. And Casey, thank you very much. Slippin' Mickeys, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks. And Elise Wax, otherwise known as Rose Thornhill. Thank you, Elise.
Thanks
for joining us and sharing all of your insights.
This was fun.
Great. So thanks, gals. Well, thanks again for joining us, to our three guests. Thank you, listeners, for joining us as well. Join us on Twitter at XFD Podcast. Let us know what you thought of X-Files Season 12.
I should actually plug our Twitter, too. If you guys want to find all the stories and everything, it's at Season 12 XF on Twitter.
Great, yes, and it's an excellent Twitter feed, and you can catch up on everything to do with season 12 there.
And we'll have the links to all the stories there too. It's an easy place to find everything.
Fantastic, and so let us know what you think about season 12. Which episode's your favorite, and what are your ideas for season 12 of the X-Files? What episode would you include if you could? So yeah, join us there. Chat with us, and we'll look forward to seeing and talking to you again next time on X-Files Diaries. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Adios.